Sometimes going to the grocery store can be chaotic. There doesn't seem to be enough time to check the list, make sure everything is there, search for the best prices, and take the time to make sure you get the best quality meat. So let ButcherBox help you out. Giving you peace of mind, ButcherBox delivers high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust straight to your door. No grocery carts required. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or hormones, 100% grass-fed, free-range, and crate-free. What more can you ask for? What about free shipping, customized box plans, exclusive member deals, recipe inspirations, tips, and tricks? You really can't go wrong with ButcherBox. Sign up at butcherbox.com/morningcup and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/morningcup and use code morningcup to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Today's podcast is brought to you by Newspapers.com, the ultimate destination for exploring the mysteries of the past. If you're fascinated by true crime, get ready to dive into the stories that made headlines. Newspapers.com offers a billion pages of historical newspapers from the U.S. and beyond, and you can search the entire collection in seconds. Their vast newspaper collection is a goldmine for eyewitness accounts, crime scene photos, news reports, and more. Whether you're interested in famous crimes or long-forgotten cases, Newspapers.com gives you a front-row seat to more than 300 years of history. For our listeners, Newspapers.com has a special offer. Use the code CUPOFMURDER for an exclusive 20% discount on your subscription. That's promo code CUPOFMURDER at Newspapers.com. Sign up today and start unraveling the true crime mysteries that keep you up at night.
There were two more murders 15 miles away.
When police arrived, they found the telephones and electricity lines.
We have a weird homicide.
A scene described by one investigator as reminiscent of a weird...
Morning.
Cup of murder.
When a true story reaches the level of pop culture phenomenon, it becomes difficult to suss out what is fact and what is headline-grabbing fiction. Today's story is one such tale. On April 10th, 1834, the victims of a famed serial killer were found in a story that is still incredibly popular today. So if you like your coffee hot but your bones chilled, sit back and start your day with a morning cup of murder. Marie Delphine McCarty, or McCarthy, depending on the sources, was born on March 19, 1787, to a wealthy family living in New Orleans. With a family background in the military and with many of the men owning land, by 1794, Delphine's family owned a large 1,344-acre plantation in a premier location with famously wealthy neighbors, and had a father who was knighted as a Chevalier of the Royal and Military Order of St. Louis, had an uncle by marriage who was the governor of the Spanish-American provinces of Louisiana and Florida, and a cousin who would serve as the mayor of New Orleans. It's safe to say that with all of this, young Delphine, from birth, lived a charmed and extravagant life. Now, in 1791, when Delphine was only 4 years old, something called the Haitian Revolution happened, and when it did, it made slaveholders in the southern U.S. and Caribbean extremely worried that resistance and rebellion would happen in their homes next. In fact, a few decades before, one of Delphine's own uncles was murdered by his slaves, and the revolution inspired quite a few conspiracies and coups all around the country. But instead of treating their slaves more kindly, even if it was only to try and save their own skin, many began treating them more harshly out of this fear of insurrection and began abusing these men, women, and children more than ever before. All the while, as was unfortunately all too common, white men in power, like those living under Delphine's own roof, had relations with free women of color or women of mixed race, and fathered quite a few children along the way. In fact, according to the sources, Delphine's father, uncle, cousins, and many other associates contributed greatly to the development of biracial free people of color, adding to the population with women who, though referred to as free, were called concubines by the legal system. While Delphine, at her young age, did not directly contribute to either the abuse or the relations, this was the background with which she was raised, and, as the world soon found out, might have been what helped shape her into the monster that she became. In the year 1800, Marie Delphine McCarty, just 14 years old, married what would be her first husband. Having just recently lost his own wife, 35-year-old Ramon Lopez y Angulo de la Candelaria married the much younger Delphine in a private ceremony, and less than 5 years later, made her both a mother and a widow. In 1804, Don Ramon appointed the position of Consul General for Spain in the territory of Orleans, was called to appear in the court of Spain, but while en route with his young pregnant wife, he suddenly died while in Havana. Just a few days later, Delphine gave birth to their daughter, and the pair returned to New Orleans on their own. Then, in June of 1808, now around the age of 21, Delphine married Jean Blanc, a prominent banker, merchant, lawyer, and legislator, and together the pair would have 4 children. Now, around the time that she entered her second marriage, Delphine's mother passed away and divided her estate between her 3 children, meaning Delphine walked away with a little over $33,000 and a downtown plantation on the bank of the Mississippi River that came with 52 slaves, livestock, and equipment. With some sources claiming Jean Blanc entered the relationship with dollar signs in his eyes, seeing Delphine as more of a cash cow than a wife, his new father-in-law gifted the young couple with yet another plantation and additional slaves. Meaning Delphine, in a world where women often weren't worth much, was now worth well over $2 million in today's money. Splitting their time between the townhouse and their plantation, Delphine and her husband made quite the lives for themselves and became prominent members of New Orleans society. But less than a year after the Battle of New Orleans, Delphine lost her 50-year-old husband and, at the age of just 28, became a single mother of 5 and a widow twice over. She was also a woman left to settle her husband's estate, which at the time of his death consisted of debts that totaled over $160,000. That's over $2.5 million in today's money. Forcing her to renounce their community property to the courts and forfeit all their mutual assets in order to protect her personal ones, over the next 10 years, Delphine was forced to auction off most of her husband's properties, including her enslaved persons, in an effort to dig herself out of his debts. The wealth she came into the marriage with was now incredibly depleted, but before she could get herself into any more trouble, her father passed away in 1824 and left his children with quite the substantial inheritance. With that, Delphine was back in business, just in time to meet 25-year-old physician Leonard Louis Nicholas LaLaurie. Though she was considered a, quote, older woman at the age of 38, was twice widowed and had 5 children to care for, she and Leonard began a relationship, and at some point she found herself pregnant with his child outside of wedlock. A scandal, to be sure, Dr. LaLaurie and Delphine sat down with a notary and negotiated their marriage contract. Worth over $66,000 and not wanting to see herself in a similar position as she was after the death of her second husband, the pair sorted out their finances and properties, and when finished, headed over to the cathedral to make it legal in the eyes of the Catholic Church. A wedding date that was, on paper, rolled back 6 months to try and avoid the scrutiny of having their child before marriage. The union, however, was not a happy one, and according to letters written by friends, the pair were known to, quote, fight, often separate, then return to each other. Some of these letters, according to the sources, even included some of the first mentions of Madame LaLaurie's treatment of her many slaves. A cruelty that has gone on to last much longer than the lives of anyone involved. Having purchased a property at 1140 Royal Street, in 1832, Madame LaLaurie built an opulent 2-story mansion there, complete with an attached slave quarters, where she, her husband, and two of her daughters lived and maintained their position in Upper New Orleans society. Then, in November of 1832, Delphine had enough of her most recent marriage and petitioned the First Judicial District Court for a separation from bed and board from her husband, claiming he, quote, treated her in such a manner as to render their living together unsupportable, which her children corroborated. Though it seemed like her request was granted, Dr. Lawlery was present inside their Royal Street home on April 10, 1834, when a fire blew the lid off of Madame Lawlery's many horrors. On that day, a fire began inside of the home, and though sources each report different versions of the discovery, one thing was absolutely sure. The slaves that were able to leave the home with their lives were each scarred and marked in ways that went beyond what was typically seen during this time period. 7 in total were rescued from what was described as truly deplorable conditions, taken out in stretchers, and delivered to safety. And though accounts have been embellished over time, most say that their bodies were covered in scars and, quote, loaded with chains. According to a local judge, neighbor, and one of the first to arrive at the fire, when most first gathered at the Lawlery home, they began work trying to rescue the family's many valuables from the fire. However, all of that changed when the fire, which originated in the kitchen slash outbuilding, began to spread, and a few concerned citizens went to check on the slaves' quarters and told the judge that they were in danger. Asking Madame Lawlery's permission to remove her slaves and take them to safety, the woman reportedly responded, quote, "There are those who would be better employed if they would attend to their own affairs instead of officiously intermeddling with the concerns of other people." Before he could ponder her words, the fire spread and he gave the orders to break down the doors. While the level of depravity depends on the source, with even the tamest story being gruesome in its own right, when those citizens walked past the threshold and saw what was inside, their focus shifted from helping the Lawlery family save their valuables to a mob forming to destroy the contents of their mansion in retaliation. What exactly inspired their anger? Well, inside the room were, quote, horribly mutilated individuals, some of which were, quote, suspended by the neck and their extremities stretched and torn, with the judge himself saying that the slaves were chained and, quote, exposed to perish in conflagration. One woman was even allegedly found wearing an iron collar, and others chained by heavy irons and forced to walk around with the weight. Days after the fire, it was reported that one of the slaves, who had been removed from the home, did not survive all that they were forced to endure, and that bones of other victims were excavated from the family's courtyard, one of which allegedly belonged to a young girl who Madame Lawlery chased straight out a window and let fall to her death. Allegedly, the girl's only crime against her mistress was snagging a knot while brushing her hair. There were also accounts of Madame Lawlery chaining her cooks to the stove, and some sources say that when police and fire marshals arrived and found the 70-year-old woman chained there, she said she started the fire as a suicide attempt because she feared that she was going to be punished. She also said that the slaves who were taken to the uppermost room never made it back down. And it appears that her own daughters were not immune to her wrath, often beaten when they made attempts to free the slaves in their mother's control. With tales of drilled holes in skulls, unnatural bone-breaking positions, men stripped of their clothing and chained to walls, eyes gouged out, fingernails pulled from the roots, festering wounds, sliced skin, lips sewn together, intestines pulled out and knotted around the waists, and some of the most unthinkable torture ever heard. Again, it's difficult to truly know what happened inside of that home. Though some of the claims have been discredited and some elaborated upon and made even more gruesome than before, it is difficult to suss out what is fact and fiction, especially considering that Madame Delphine Lawlery still appears in modern works of fiction, which effectively can rewrite pieces of history. Regardless, though, it was clear that this woman treated her slaves in such a horrific way that it completely stunned an entire community, who realized that there was a serial killer masking herself and living amongst their highest society. In total, 12 deaths were documented at the Royal Street Mansion, though the causes of death were not mentioned and in some cases, impossible to discern. These deaths include that of a woman named Bonne, a cook and laundress, and her four children, Juliet, who died at 13, Florence, who died at 10, Jules, who died at just 6, and Leontine, who was just 4 years old. According to the sources, at some point, the rumors about the treatment of her slaves, though they had no clue what was truly going on, spread enough that a local lawyer was dispatched to remind the madam of the laws for the upkeep of slaves. During his visit, though, the lawyer found no evidence of wrongdoing or mistreatment, meaning the true scope of her crimes may have never been revealed if not for that fire. Wanting justice for those she tortured and killed, when the officials went looking for Madame Lalaurie, she was nowhere to be found. That's because with one loyal servant still on her side, either loyal or completely terrified of her, the guilty woman managed to slip through the mayhem, get into her carriage, and ride off with stunned citizens trying desperately to hold onto the horse and snatch her from the inside. The coachman used his whip to fend them off, escaped with his mistress, and took her to a schooner that was waiting at the docks. While she sailed off to some unknown location, he arrived back at the home where the angry mob destroyed the carriage and stabbed the horse to death. Rumor and speculation about her whereabouts spread throughout the city, and eventually she managed to settle in Paris and was later joined by the rest of her family. It was here that, on December 7th, 1849, the woman who caused so much pain and suffering quietly passed away inside of her home. There are some differing accounts on what exactly happened to her body, and to this day, there is argument amongst some claiming that we don't really know the true location of her remains. The House of Horrors on Royal Street was burned down by a mob in 1834 and remained in ruins for the next 4 years before being rebuilt into what you see today on ghost tours throughout the city. In a place where the supernatural and paranormal have become their bread and butter, the story of Madame Lalaurie remains New Orleans' most famous ghost story. Thank you for joining me in my morning cup of murder. Please join me again tomorrow to hear a terrible thing happened on April 11th. Don't forget to rate and subscribe and let me know how you like it. If you want to help support the podcast, there's always Patreon or just sharing it with your true crime obsessed friends. And remember, stay safe.